Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio now. I'm Bonnie North. Wisconsin novelist Kathleen Ernst has written numerous historical books for children, but it's a series of more modern-day mysteries that has adults anxiously awaiting new installments. The latest book in her Chloe Ellefson series has recently come out. If you're not familiar with the series, Ellefson is a curator at Old World Wisconsin around whom things just seem to happen. In her first two books, the reluctant sleuth found herself helping to solve murders at Old World Wisconsin. A third book brought her to a lighthouse on Wisconsin's Rock Island. But the latest installment, Heritage of Darkness, finds Ellefson traveling out of state to the small town of Decorah, Iowa, just before Christmas. Kathleen Ernst picks up the story from there for Lake Effect's Mitch Teich.
Well, Chloe is visiting Vesterheim Norwegian American Museum in northeast Iowa. It is a marvelous museum, and Chloe is going to stay very firmly rooted in Wisconsin. She will keep her job at Old World Wisconsin, but as the series progresses, it's nice for her to travel to other historic sites and places. And I look for places that I think are wonderful, museums or sites that I can share with readers. And I also look for places that will fit a theme that is developing within the series. And in this case, at the end of the third book, Chloe had come to the conclusion that she really wanted to work on some of her relationships. And so when Heritage of Darkness begins, Chloe and her mother are on the way to Decorah. Her mother is a master rosemaler, which is a type of Norwegian folk art painting. And Chloe has decided that she's going to take a beginner's class while mom takes an advanced class, and this will be a week of bonding. And her friend, Rocky McKenna, who is a police officer, he wants to be supportive. So when he notices that there's a carving class going on the same week, he decides that he'll come along too.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the Vesterheim. It is not exactly a living history museum in the same sense as Old World Wisconsin, but at the same time, you might argue that the community of Decorah almost fills that role. Norwegian immigrant tradition is very much a part of modern life there.
It is. It's really celebrated by the whole community, and there is still a very strong Norwegian contingent there. Vesterheim is also unique in a couple of ways. It has the largest collection of artifacts that has been collected to represent any single group in the country. There is also an outdoor component. It is not living history in the way that a site like Old World Wisconsin is, but it's actually the oldest outdoor museum in the country.
Well, and I want to get back to some of the things, the artifacts that are at the heart of this mystery in just a minute. But we should also note that, as you say, Chloe was joined in Iowa and in the midst of this mystery by her, we will call him a boyfriend, even though they're not they're not really fond of that term. Rolke is a police officer. He ends up being called on to assist in the case. And as it's been in the previous books, the relationship between Chloe and her beau is a little tenuous, or at least it's still developing. Is that a key for you to keep their relationship in kind of a formative place?
I think I need to do that for quite some time. Readers, from the feedback I've gotten from readers, one of the things that they enjoy most is watching these two people grow personally and also as their relationship grows as they figure things out. And they are definitely still figuring out how to be together. They're very different people, and yet in some ways they're really, really good together. And that's going to take some time for them to sort all these issues out.
Do you feel like you know Chloe better after four mysteries than you did when you set out?
Oh, what an interesting question. I do. I spend so much time thinking about Chloe and her world. It takes about a year to write each book, more than that if you think about when the preliminary research starts. So, yeah, Chloe lives in my head quite a bit. And actually, that's one of the real joys of a series is that I get to see Chloe and also Ralkie develop and grow and become, I hope, more complex as time goes by, just because we have more time to think about it and to spend with them.
Do you see things around you and think about how Chloe would react?
Constantly. Yeah, I tell people Chloe is not me, even though we have a lot of things in common. But because Chloe is in my mind pretty much all the time, there is a filter in my brain, I think, and it just sort of constantly picks up how Chloe would react to this, what Chloe would think about this, or, ooh, that's interesting. I could use that in a future book.
As long as it's not unsafe to be around you.
Right. I think this is a very healthy, safe way to channel some of these things.
Well, so let's go back to Decora and the Vesterheim. It is not very long after Chloe and Relke and Merritt mm-hmm. arrive. Merritt is Chloe's mom. That murder takes place. Who is it that's the victim, and what is the unusual murder weapon?
Well, the victim is one of the teachers. A very talented lady named Petra does not show up at the opening reception, and unfortunately, very quickly, Chloe and Relke find her where she has been attacked and left in an immigrant trunk. And the murder weapon is a lefse pin, which for the uninitiated looks like a rolling pin. It has grooves in it, and they're often much bigger and heavier than a rolling pin. And they were used specifically to make a type of Norwegian flatbread named lefse, made with a potato dough.
And this is this, as we learn, is a pretty heavy object.
It is, yes. It's quite heavy, and my husband and I have taken it to some events and some book fairs and things, and we give people a chance to hold it, and almost invariably the first words out of their mouth is, "Oh, you could do some damage with one of these things."
And like any good murder mystery victim, there were no shortage of people who might have sought to do Petra harm.
No, Petra was not a nice person in any regard. So the suspects added up pretty quickly as Chloe and Relke start learning more about her and the way she interacted with people.
Let's go back to what else is going on as this is playing out. While Chloe and Relke and the Decora police are trying to figure out who killed Petra, Chloe is in the uncomfortable position for her of taking a rose modeling class taught by her mother.
That shift happened when Petra was taken out of the picture, and the museum director had to figure out how to make all this work. And so Chloe's mom takes over the beginning class.
Well, tell us more about this uniquely Norwegian tradition of rose modeling. What is it within the broader context of painting?
Well, it's a decorative form of painting. It goes back many, many, many years in Norway. And there are regional traditions that developed so that, in one valley, this type of painting happened, and over the next valley, it might be slightly different. But it's all a decorative form of painting. And if we think back to rural people, very plain homes. In fact, there's a conversation that I really like towards the end of the book, where Chloe assumes that her mother loves painting because of the glory that she gets from being a champion. And her mother says, let's think about peasant people and how dark their homes were and how long the winter days were and what it would mean to have an itinerant painter show up with all these pigments and colors and hues and the ability to paint flourishes on the walls or on the furniture. So it's really a treasured folk art form. It almost died out in America. But during the Great Depression, a wagon maker in Stoughton, he was painting wagons, and he used to be a master rosemaler. When work was slow, he started painting flourishes on some of the wagons, and he's really credited with the revival.
We should also mention what Relke is studying, and this is a discipline known as chip carving.
Chip carving, right. And of the different forms of wood carving, I decided to have Relke study chip carving because I believed it would really suit his nature. Chip carving is very geometric. It's very precise. Very intricate designs are made by just carving out tiny little chips. And Relke, who goes over really just on a lark, decides that he loves it.
He is allowed to divide his time essentially between chip carving and helping solve this mystery.
Right. Yeah. The police understand that while they have the primary responsibility, Chloe and Relke are in Vesterheim that week. They're in the heart of the community. And so Relke is asked to just sort of keep his eyes and ears open and report back.
And there is a wooden artifact that plays a role in this mystery. It's in a way kind of a primitive and very blunt message delivery system.
Yes, you're referring to the Buddha stick. It's a message tube is the best translation. And it had a sharp point on one end and a hollow tube that someone could write a note and stick it in there. And in the very old days, if a king or a leader had word that was very important and he wanted to make sure that everybody got it, he would send out runners. And if a farmer wasn't home, he might come home and find this thing literally stabbed into his door. And as I was looking at artifacts and deciding which ones could help tell the story, that just had so much potential.
As this book plays out, they're in the middle of the Christmas season, which is a big time at the Vesterheim.
It is. Vesterheim celebrates Norwegian Christmas weekend every year, the first weekend in December, and it is my favorite special event there of all the things that they do. There's all kinds of crafts and music, but they also explore some of these old traditions, and so it's a marvelous time to be at the museum.
How much time did you spend in Decorah as you researched this to set this book here?
Well, I've been going to Decorah for a number of years. The very first Chloe mystery involved an antique ale bowl, and we went over, my husband and I went over, just to study the ale bowls in the collection. But it's such a phenomenal museum. That was 4 years ago. And so I've been probably 25 times since. I love taking classes there. I take folk art classes there, rose mulling and handwork, stitching, and some food classes. One of the nice things there is you have this incredible collection. So you can spend your days learning how to paint and then take a break in the middle of the afternoon and be allowed to see things in the collection or in storage. And that's really a rare opportunity.
What do the people at the Vesterheim think of having a murder mystery set there?
They are actually thrilled. They were very excited when we started talking about this. In fact, one of the staff members there suggested it very early on. Why don't you have Chloe come to Vesterheim? So they've been marvelous. They've been very supportive. And I think they understand that a lot of the people that love this series, they love history. They love museums. And I've heard from many readers who sort of make it an annual tradition now. We'll read the book and then we'll go travel and see the site where Chloe went.
Kathleen Ernst, thanks so much for sharing this with us.
Thank you very much. Delighted to be here.
Wisconsin novelist Kathleen Ernst's latest book is Heritage of Darkness. It's the fourth book in the Chloe Ellefson series of mysteries. Ernst is at work on a fifth, part of which we're told will be set in Milwaukee. There's a link to more about the book, including pictures of some of the objects we talked about, from wuwm.com/lakeeffect. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I hope you'll be with us again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. Fresh air comes your way next.